Thank you, Kim. What a beautiful day. This is John Williams. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm Catherine Switzer.
Go 2-6-1 Fearless.
Lord have mercy.
We talked about the Boston Marathon yesterday. I told the Boston Marathon story. That's the lady who 50 years ago, tomorrow, 50 years ago, this running of the Boston Marathon got kicked out. Because she was a lady. She's going to say hi to us in the show a little later on. That'll be a fun conversation. The president speaks later today. We'll broadcast that live here on WGN. That will be at least interesting. Speaking of famous politicians, Kim did the story about whether or not Blagojevich, former Governor Rod Blagojevich, should get time off. Should he get off early because of his good behavior? I'm always intrigued by the Blago conversations out there. I always felt that Rod Blagojevich got too much of a sentence. I think he went to jail for too long. It doesn't mean I have a lot of sympathy for him. He done wrong. He was, Lord, what a clown. What a disservice to the people. And we did it to ourselves. We voted for him twice. But I'm not sure how long you're supposed to go to jail for that. And it seems to me like the amount of time Rod's been serving is more than is necessary, right? He's never going to get a, you know, like when you send somebody to jail, it should either be a deterrent to the next guy. I'm not sure that any more years for Rod are going to keep the next governors from Illinois from going to jail. That's kind of what they do. I'm not sure that's going to deter the next guy. It doesn't sort of make anybody whole again. I'm not sure who the victims are of Rod Blagojevich, except all of us. And if you started pointing your fingers at who are the politicians that really screwed us, I guess you could say him, but some of them are still in office. So I'm not really sure that that fixes anything. I'm not sure what the purpose is. I never had such animosity to Blagojevich that I thought, oh boy, he's got to go to jail for 50 years. That'll teach him. That'll teach him. I never felt that way. He was just such a clown. And I think he's probably days in jail thinking, how did I get here? How did I get here? So if they let him out a little bit early, I would not be outraged. I don't think that leads the next governor to going, oh, Blago only went up the river for about 6 years, so maybe I'll go ahead and do this deal because it's not so, you know, the downside isn't so, they don't think that doesn't work. I'm just kind of curious if you want to jump in here. 312-981-7200. Do you have a soft spot for old Blago? And then they say, well, he's behaving well in jail. Of course he is. He's a con man. Of course he's behaving well. He's conning the other, he's conning his cellmates. He's conning the whole system. He's conning you and me if we let him out early. But really, what's the harm in letting the guy get off a little sooner than normal? This is not about his wife. It is a little bit about his daughters. They're lucky she's not in jail, right? My number's 312-981-7200. Just jump in here and tell me if you have any, here again, I'm not sure sympathy is the right word, but would you entertain the idea that Blago gets off a little bit early because of the amount of time he served and because he's not creating a ruckus there in jail? I didn't hear in Kim's story, now that I think about it, if he said that he's sorry. I'm not exactly sure that an act of contrition from him will ever come. I'm not sure he's wired that way. I think to be really sorry, you have to understand that you did wrong and what you did wrong and all of that jazz. And then reach out to the people that you wronged and then tell them you're sorry. I don't know that Rob Blagojevich has that in him. Also on the show in this first hour, I want to talk about the front page story in the Chicago Sun-Times today about the Cubs ring. We'll talk more about it tomorrow, probably. But if the Cubs gave you, and they're giving away like 1,980, almost 2,000 of these championship rings, if they give you one of those rings, is it wrong for you to sell it? Is it wrong for them to tell you you can't? We'll start with Greg. Jump in there, Greg. You're on WGN. What can I do for you, sir?
Hey, John. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've been listening to you for years.
Thanks for calling, man.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'll tell you what. I can understand, you know, a little sympathy for Rod, but I got to tell you, these politicians need to be held to a very high standard or it's just going to get worse. Who was that last character we sent to prison? And they let him out to go visit his sick wife. You think they'd let me out? Of course not.
George Ryan.
Yeah, George Ryan. Yeah, thank you. So I really believe that, you know, the sentence was imposed by the judge, and it's been tried several times in the court of public opinion and appeals. And if that's what he's got for a sentence, then so be it. Maybe you'll think twice next time.
Hey, thanks for calling, man. I'll okay, that's one not on my side, if I'm counting correctly, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Every now and then I turn around, I think there's going to be a parade back there. Ain't no parade. No parade. Hey, Gene, this is John.
Hi. The biggest crime, as far as I'm concerned, that he committed, and I never hear it mentioned, is how he cheated the people of Illinois out of being able to get on back on our feet, get that humongous debt taken care of, and the millions of dollars we're paying every week on interest because all of those loans and all of that debt is just accumulating. It doesn't really excuse the Republicans who kicked the can down the road either, Thompson and Edgar and all the others. But it's just, I mean, he really compounded the problem. And didn't he serve for one whole term and two or three years of his second term?
No, yeah, we reelected him. That, I think that's on you and me, Gene, as much as
it is. Oh, I'll take responsibility. And, you know, I remember what he said after he was first elected. The first time he said, you know, something about transparency and, you know, making things better. And, I mean, all he did was make things worse. It's like if all of these Russian entanglements come down on Trump, we're going to lose another few years in trials or whatever, whether it's him or his associates or whatever. It's just wasted time, and it's billions of dollars that, you know, lost.
I'm glad you called. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
14-year term, you know. 14 years. Steve, do you have any willingness to let the former governor off a little early because he's been behaving nicely in jail?
Well, it's not my decision.
Wow, there's a non-answer.
Well, it does seem to be widely accepted that it's a pretty long term for what happened. But, you know, he's gone back to the judge, and they've gone back, and they've appealed and appealed and haven't won yet.
He's got one more, though, here, right? I mean, that's the...
He's got one today before the full Circuit Court of Appeals. And, you know, they want... they say Judge Zagel was incorrect in not taking letters from his fellow prisoners about his rehabilitation. Prosecutors say the judge had plenty of info about the rehabilitation when he considered it.
Yeah. Let's ask Kim what she thinks. Hey, Kim, this is John. You're on the air.
I do agree with you, John. I do think it was excessive what he got. However, he's such a stupid clown that even if he got out early, the whole world knows what a moron he is, and he's never going to escape that. So that's something he has to live with forever.
Thanks for the phone. Oh, pardon me. I thought you were done. Finish that thought there. Hold on, Kim. You're back on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, but on the third hand, that first guy who said the politicians need to be held to a higher account, I completely agree with that. Look what we're stuck with this country now, with Trump. So, come on. We can't let these guys run rampant, and we are.
And that's well put. Thank you, Kim. Remember, Blago was seriously considered a presidential candidate. There was talk about him as the rising star in Illinois.
Yeah, but he was the guy saying it. I mean, I don't know how. Remember he took that trip to, to Serbia?
Yeah.
With Jesse Jackson?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, like most politicians on the way up, they were their own best self-promoter. I don't know how seriously others considered him.
Yeah, I don't remember. I just remember that part. I forgot that he was the one that told me that.
Yeah, right.
Somewhere, Judy Bartopinka, the late and ever greater Judy Bartopinka, is turning over. And I told you guys, I warned you guys. Yeah, we didn't listen. We didn't listen, Judy.
I've never been in the presence of a politician with less of a filter than him.
Than him or than her?
Than him.
Than Blago. Yeah.
I mean, were you ever alone in a room with them talking where...
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. He had the same sort of tendency that Jesse Jackson has displayed at times and other famous people do in order to convey an intimacy, in order to sort of share and show that you're sharing. You use really bad language.
You know, remember how the phrase he used to describe the control of the Senate seat was effing golden?
Sure.
Right? Kind of a famous phrase, and one if you're under indictment that you might cower away from a little bit.
Yeah.
I was interviewing him one time, and we talked for 20 minutes or so afterward. I almost couldn't shake him. And I had him sign the book, and I said, hey, why don't you sign it with that? And he did.
Really?
Hey, Steve, thanks for the interview. It was?
Bleeping Golden.
Bleeping Golden.
Do you think that he realized how...
I don't know what he was thinking.
But I mean, how much trouble he was in or how bad this was for him?
He seemed to not think it was possible.
That he would go to jail. That doesn't happen.
That was looming, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff,
I've got it up on my wall at home.
Do you really?
I do, yeah.
I do have... you know, I ask all the authors that come through to sign books for me, and then I told Brenda the other day, because they're scattered around our house, I want to make a collection of my autographed books. I don't know if I have an autographed copy of his. I don't know if I would proudly display it if I did.
Well, I displayed it by what he wrote.
Jeff, you're on the air. Jump in here. What do you want to say?
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. I called initially to agree with you and your point, but I can't believe you just agreed with Kim comparing Blago to Trump. I mean, Trump has, and I'm no fan of Trump either, but he's done absolutely nothing wrong as far as I know, breaking the law, you know, certainly getting to the presidency. And boy, to compare he and Blago is, I think, really apples and oranges completely.
Yeah, if I sounded like I was agreeing with her, I want to play the tape back. I heard her point. I didn't fight her on it, but that's where I said, wow, can you imagine we thought about making Blagojevich a presidential candidate? Trump hasn't broken any laws to our knowledge. You may not like him, but those are apples and oranges.
Right. Yeah. That's my feelings exactly. So, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. You bet. Let's go to, it looks like, is it Audie? Audie, this is John. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, it is Audie. You said it correct. I think he should be let out now. I think he's done more than enough time. I'm not saying what he did was right, but he's done his time. You know, I just, he's a character, like you said. And I really, truly believe it's time for him to be let out.
You know, the thing that gets me, thanks, Audie, appreciate the call, is that if he goes to jail for 14 years, then everybody else has to go to jail for a lot longer. Other white-collar criminals who have betrayed the public trust, or other criminals who punch people, beat them up, and they can show the broken bones. I mean, really, if you... I think that's why I have trouble getting my head around 14 years for Blago, or 22, which some people wanted. I mean, whatever the number is, if you sort of compare that to the crimes that other people have committed and how long they go to jail, I think that's the sort of metric I'm using here. He's gone to jail disproportionately long compared to his crimes relative to the amount of times that other people have to serve. You see what I'm saying? That's why I think I'm always backing away from, this isn't a lot of sympathy for him. I mean, yeah, throw the guy in jail, whatever. He should go to jail for just being such a dope. He should be in jail for just trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. But really that long? And if there were a way, if this three-judge, is it a three-judge panel today, Steve?
You were talking? I think it's the full panel.
Wow. Was that five, six, seven, whatever?
Seven, maybe. Seven? They probably went before, you know, partial panel three or so, and then got it to go to the full.
If they let him out a little early, they said, all right, fine. He's just going to wear him down. He's just going to wear him down. They're going to say, all right, fine. Be the first time in the history of the full panel that their statement reads, okay, fine, let him go. We don't want to do this anymore. It's a 121. And this is WGN. We're talking about Blago. Should he get out early? Tony wanted to say something about that. Hey, Tony, this is John.
Hi, John. Good to hear your voice again, man.
Good to hear you, Tony. What's up?
Well, first off, I can't wait to read the book that he's going to write.
Yeah.
When you spend time like that, I'm sure he's got one going. But I think they should cut him some slack, mainly because there was a lot of other politicians that did a whole lot worse. That got a whole lot less, you know. Jesse Jackson, what did he get? Like a year and a half he wound up spending, and the guy winds up, you know, taking $750,000 of the taxpayers' money and blows it on stupid things. George Ryan, because of his shenanigans, six kids died. You know, and nobody ever really gives him any hell for that. But that guy was taking and taking and taking and taking for years. And again, not only did he, you know, not even serve his whole term, which wasn't that much, you know, he still gets out, and now he's fighting, I think, to get his pension back and stuff like that. But I just think that Blagel got railroaded.
That would make the conversation more interesting if we also considered, and do you want to give Blagel his pension back? Do you want to let the taxpayers start to put money back in his bank account? Now I'm not sure how I feel about that, Tony. Don't make it hard.
Don't. I hear you. No, I wouldn't want to see him do that. That's for sure. But I just think the guy did get railroaded because it never proved that he actually took any money. And I think the other thing is that I think they had it in for him for something. I don't know. I've never seen a guy just get so deep into it, like with the judge and stuff like that.
He was in over his head. He was definitely in over his head. He was in over his head trying to make the deal that he was trying to make, and he was in over his head when that whole circus became, you know, his trial. The trial, he and his attorneys, I don't think, were up to it. Tony, listen, I'm going to go. I appreciate your call. Glad you're listening. It's 127. Steve, what was the title of the Blago book? Because you had his book, right? I have in front of me My Fight for Freedom and Justice, written April of 2015. I don't remember this one. Michael, this is John. You're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi.
Oh, thank you very much. I just had a couple quick points, and then I'll probably hang up and listen to your comment. Number one is, I don't know who the victim of this crime is. And if the sentence is to be a detriment, politicians sell their votes all the time to each other, and they'll do anything to get your vote, only now money's involved. And if the sentence is for a detriment, why don't we put gun dealers who sell to a known felon or gangbanger, why don't they get 14 years? I think we ought to release the guy. I'm with you, John. He suffered enough, and this is not the same kind of crime where victims are innocent children and kids going to school and what have you. I think the whole thing is just blown way out of proportion.
Michael, thanks for the call. Jason, you're on the air. You're on WGN. What do you want to say?
Hey, good afternoon, John. I'm glad to have you back in the prime time.
Nice of you to say that.
I feel like he got railroaded all the way around for the simple fact that he did not sell the seat. He didn't do it. They stopped him before he was able to do it, and then they give him this outrageous sentence of 14 years because they want to make an example because the last guy went to prison. I mean, you know, they railroaded him all the way around, I feel.
That's right. He didn't sell the seat. He had this thing. It was golden. He was going to try and cut a deal. Before he did, they stopped him. Yeah, yeah. I forgot about it that way. Hey, thanks for the call, Jason. And finally, let's go to Don. You're on WGN. Don, what did you want to say? Hi.
Hi. As with any of us, if you do the crime, you're going to have to do the time. Now, they stopped Blagojevich before he actually sold the seat. But let's look at it in other terms. If somebody is trying to kill their spouse and they're hiring a hitman, they still have to do their jail time because they were trying to hire the hitman, even though the hit was not accomplished.
Think of how complicated it would have been if he had executed the deal. Would we have
exactly
the mechanism to sort of rescind that appointment? I don't know that we would.
I don't think we would.
Yeah.
But he should have been thinking of his wife and his children he was doing all of this.
Both of
when
them.
When it comes to
both
sentencing,
of them. Yeah.
The judge has a certain amount of leeway based on the attitude and the contrition of the person being tried. And there was never an attitude of contrition. He never, in his mind, he never did anything wrong.
Yeah, that's Don. Thanks for the call, Don. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Did I understand correctly that Armada, as the president put it, that we were sending to North Korea was going the other way?
Yeah, it's a weird story. So, and the White House is blaming the Pentagon, and it seems as if the Pentagon did sort of get the situation wrong. But the Carl Vinson, the battle group, was headed toward exercises in off Australia, not toward North Korea at all. And it's significant, not because it was sort of fueling this, I don't want to say hysteria, but heightened awareness of the potential for some sort of military strike.
Are you kidding
there.
Me? The world's been on edge this week because of everybody flexing their muscle around North Korea.
Right.
The Chinese and the Russians were reportedly having ships follow our aircraft carrier, our strike force group. They had ships following ours, monitoring ours as we monitored North Korea. That was the story we had yesterday.
Well, apparently yesterday the Navy released a picture of the Vinson off the Sunda Strait, which, as you know from your geography, is between Java and Sumatra.
Sure.
And the picture was taken on Saturday, and a reporter who actually knows all that geography said, wait, that can't be. And they started asking questions, and they said, well, yeah, it wasn't actually.
And
so just if you'll allow me, the White House said they were relying on guidance from the Defense Department. Officials there described a glitch-ridden sequence of events from a premature announcement of the deployment by the Pacific Command to an erroneous explanation by Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, all of which perpetuated this false narrative that an America armada was racing toward the waters off North Korea.
I'll bet you Mad Dog's mad now.
Yeah, I mean, it seems as if, there was a mistake from them.
I'm sorry, Steve. I listened carefully to your reading there, that explanation, and I'm still not clear.
Right.
I know what happened.
So what they're saying is that at the Pentagon, they screwed it up. They announced prematurely where the Vinson might have been going, and then they're referring to some explanation by Defense Secretary Mattis that was incorrect.
Was it ever heading to North Korea?
No. And apparently not. And then
for
they go
weeks,
with this information.
It's been on its way to North Korea for days. Okay, keep going.
Then they go with this information to the White House and Sean Spicer. And so Sean was asked about it. The National Security Advisor was also asked about it, McMaster, and was answering questions about it.
So it wasn't going there.
It is now, if you're interested.
What's that?
I'm trying to find now. They said that it had moved and is heading now toward the area off North Korea.
Is that just to save face?
I don't know.
Okay, fine. We'll send it to North Korea. Whatevs. I do not want that to be the reason that we're sending a carrier strike group.
It's now on a northerly course for the Korean Peninsula, expected to arrive in the region sometime next week.
Do they have one of those little things on their rearview mirror on the aircraft carrier that has an N and an E and a W and an S?
You know how hard it is to keep the lane striped in the ocean? It's not easy.
Okay.
No, honestly, it's not funny because...
I know you don't know the answers to the questions
right.
I have, but I'm going to ask them anyway.
Okay.
So that's our Navy, right? They knew where they were going, correct?
Well,
they knew what they were doing.
Right, and so that's kind of the issue. Somewhere, at some point, someone must have figured out that they, and in fact, if you don't mind, I'll just read from the New York Times.
Please.
It's their story. Privately, however, other officials expressed bewilderment that the Pentagon did not correct its timeline, particularly given the tension surging in the region and the fact that Mr. Spicer, as well as National Security Advisor Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, were publicly answering questions about it.
So it was over by Australia, but now it's heading to North Korea.
Yeah, and when at the time they said it was heading toward North Korea and the Sea of Japan,
right.
It was actually heading
south
for joint exercises with the Australian Navy in the Indian Ocean.
Right.
3,500 miles away from the Korean Peninsula.
I'm going to get a map out. I just want to make sure these things aren't real close.
So someone gave bad information.
They moved North Korea?
No. Someone gave bad information, and then it looks as if someone clenched and said, wait a minute, and they didn't come out and clarify.
Well, I know they don't have to give the coordinates of our ships, but I mean, this to me isn't the sort of thing that you almost could make a mistake on. It's an aircraft carrier, and then it's a bunch of other support ships, and they're sailing somewhere to do something, and everybody's talking about it. How the hell doesn't everybody in the Pentagon know where that is and where it's going and what it's doing? I mean, I don't think that has to be a big company secret. That should be relatively well known.
Well, I mean, it was publicized with the idea that it was being made public as an intimidation force.
Okay, is it possible then that the publicizing of it, knowing full well the ships weren't anywhere near there, it's like, hey, what are you going to do? You just see an ocean in a ship and you go, wow, it's in North Korea. Is it possible they were misleading us just for that purpose?
I think they would have said that.
And also, they know they would have got caught. You'll get caught doing that.
Right. And the people who they need to fool, whether it's the Chinese or others, have the capability to see where our ships are.
Yesterday, the Secretary of Education's team put out a notice about something that she had done or the Education Department was doing, and they misspelled education again. The Education Department has evidently not got spell check. But that's just kind of a little ha-ha-ha thing. That's just something the liberal elite media loves to latch on to. You know, the way they have typos in their tweets and they misspell things a lot. On the President's Library of Congress official poster, there's a misspelling. So we just kind of like to go ha-ha-ha on that stuff. But the Navy? An aircraft carrier? They weren't sure where an aircraft carrier was?
All weekend, I'm turning on my TV about this.
I'm telling you, I know. That's why
strike.
I don't really care about North Korea, but I thought the whole world, we were about to have World War XII, and that I wonder where the Russians were. Were the Russians and the Chinese that were monitoring us, were they in North Korea, off the shores of North Korea, going, wait, I swear to God, we can't find them. They're not here. Now, I know you said they're here. I saw the Instagram. I swear to God, they're not here.
I'm pretty sure the Chinese and the Russians aren't very forthcoming with where their navies are either.
I'm not sure that was... By the way, if a Chinese guy marries a Russian woman, that's what they sound like. I swear to God, I don't know where they are.
Okay, you were ahead of the game about 30 seconds ago, and it's kind of gone south.
Don, you're on the air. What did you want to say? You're on WGN.
Hello, King John.
What?
Well, two things. I guess... One, this proves that if you dump enough fake news out there, it starts getting hard for the media to know the difference. And it also kind of harkens back to a question that Mr. Spicer was asked a month or so ago. Can we believe the things that the president and the White House tell us, or should we just assume that they're all false?
Yeah. I mean, that question was literally almost like that put to the president. Or to Sean Spicer, are we supposed to believe everything he says? And he said, well, if it's not a joke, yeah, when the president says it, you should believe that it is true, or that the president believes it is true. So, Steve, did the president know where the boats were? Did he know what was going on?
If they're smart, they don't tell him.
Well, you know, I'm sure that they'll be going through.
If they're smart, they don't tell him.
Okay, this is war.
Goodbye, Don.
I'm sure that the New York Times probably has gone through the... President's statements as well, and they're not in this story.
Yeah,
we'll see if further reporting indicates that they are. But I mean, the government seems to be coming forward with the idea that it was a screw up, not a misdirection or anything like that.
Right.
A screw up in
communication.
Communication.
Yeah, I don't know which is more assuring, but there it is. Okay, thank you, Steve. We're just real quick here. Randy, jump in here. I need to take a break. I'm going to move on to something else. But, Randy, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking, you know, isn't this the way Pearl Harbor started, that misinformation got back to a Japanese soldier, and he translated a message to somebody, and we ended up having Pearl Harbor and then having... you know, the H-bomb landing on them just out of misunderstood information.
Not exactly sure I know all the details of the version of the story you're giving me there. That sort of is, you know, some of those little points are ringing true, but I'm not sure I'm connecting all the dots there with you, Randy. I hope not. It's 1:47. Thank you for the call. Okay, I'll just pause. You do too. We're going to move forward on WGN. Hey, Catherine, this is John. How are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Welcome to WGN Radio in Chicago. Congratulations on winning the Boston Marathon yesterday.
Oh, well, I love winning it. That's
you did.
Fantastic.
You did. You won the marathon. Did you know that? You were in first place.
I'll tell you, certainly in my own life I won it because it was a triumph over all things telling me that maybe I couldn't do it.
Well, why did you run? So we've talked a little bit about you the last couple of days. The whole world's been paying attention to the story again. But 50 years ago, as a college student, you ran the Boston Marathon when women weren't supposed to. When the director saw you, he famously charged you and tried to push you out of the race. You finished that year. But was it a statement for women when you ran, or was it a statement for just, hey, I like to run?
It started off as a statement for I just want to run. And actually, it was my coach who had told me in practice that if I was interested in running the Boston Marathon, I had to prove to him in practice that I could do it. We actually ran 31 miles one day, and when he fainted at the end of the workout, he was utterly convinced I could and helped me sign up for the race. So my running Boston at first in 67 was really just a reward from my coach. I was just a kid who wanted to run. It wasn't until the official attacked me did it become political and changed everything.
How often have you thought about that moment when he attacked you, when he pushed you, and what exactly happened?
I would say I think about that moment every day because it was an event that not only changed my life, but it changed my career. It changed my sense of self, my destiny, and also changed millions of other women's lives. It's really been amazing to see what has happened in women's running. It's nothing less than a social revolution. So that is, you know, I have to thank him every day. I often say some of the worst things in your life can become the best thing, and that certainly did.
Were you fearful? Did you have any? Did you know that, okay, I know what's happening. I'm a lady running it. He doesn't want me in it. Or did you think you were being attacked for some other reason?
I didn't know. I was only 20, and he came out of the blue. He jumped off the press truck, and suddenly he was there attacking me and trying to throw me out of the competition. So I was, you know, a bit embarrassed, terrified, really wondering what was happening. And I really just wanted to get out of there. And you know, then, of course, my boyfriend solved the whole dilemma by punching the official and sending him out of the race instead.
By the way, it's a great picture.
We love this story.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and whatever happened to that boyfriend, by the way?
Well, he was my boyfriend, and we eventually married, which is a hilarious story in itself, and we eventually divorced. So that boyfriend is no more. And I've been happily married to somebody else for 30 years. But I'll tell you, it was an interesting marriage because I was not a talented athlete. I was just somebody who worked very hard and achieved a lot. And he was a very, very talented athlete who thought things should happen to him and he deserved to be a great athlete. And because he never trained, or certainly never trained as hard as I did, he didn't become the athlete he should have. So it was a tortoise and the hare marriage, if you see what I mean.
Sure, I do. So did you run every year since then, or how many times have you run the marathon?
I've run Boston eight times. The 2 years after 60, 68, and 69, I didn't run because I was afraid of old Jock Semple. And in 70, I decided I was going to train hard, come back, meet the qualifying standard. And then I improved from then and eventually ran a world-class time in 1975 and went on to win the New York City Marathon after that. So I actually achieved much more than I ever believed as an athlete I could. And that only fueled my determination to create opportunities for women in the sport, because I knew even the 67 Boston Marathon, after the incident happened, after the official attacked me, I mean, I got over being angry with him and over the next 20 miles. I just thought he was an ignorant person who was a product of his time. But I was wondering why women weren't there, and I knew they weren't there because they were afraid, because they didn't have opportunities. So I decided I would spend the rest of my life, you know, creating those opportunities for them. But first I wanted to become a better athlete, and I did. And when I became a better athlete, I knew other women could if they only had the opportunity.
What's 261 Fearless do?
261 Fearless is named after the bib number the official tried to tear off me. And who would have imagined after all of these years, a number which was just three digits suddenly has become this kind of magic number, meaning fearless in the face of adversity. And what we have decided to do a couple of years ago, we made it a 501c3, a nonprofit, which is a movement and an organization that is called 261 Fearless, because everybody was saying this number makes me feel fearless, using the vehicle of running to reach women around the world and help empower them. It's not about running. It's about changing women's lives. All the women who are running, the millions of women who are running, they're not trying to become Olympic athletes or even lose 5 pounds. What they're trying to do is to try to achieve in the 10, 20 or hour or minutes they have a day to have that sense of empowerment and self-esteem. And that changes every aspect of their life. We know if we can reach women in countries and in places where they have no opportunities whatsoever, where they are in fearful situations, we can help change and empower them. That's what this is all about.
I'm really glad that you've been doing what you're doing. I'm glad that you were able to run so well in the marathon, because it put you and this story and your movement back on the map. I have to go, but just in passing, as a sort of passing note, you looked great when you crossed the finish line.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that because I was utterly exhausted. The training had gone well, but I was utterly exhausted. But let me tell you, I was so grateful to the streets and the people of Boston who really were a part of that history over the last 50 years. Gave me an enormous sense of gratitude when I came across the finish line. I felt wonderful. I felt validated. And I felt the next 50 years are going to be even more triumphant than the last 50.
Catherine Switzer, it's a pleasure to meet you. Congratulations. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. Great to hear from you. Thank you for making me a part of this.
More news coming up on WGN. Thank you, Steve. 209. This is John Williams. I'm downtown Chicago, which is more than...
Is it time to say once and for all the president is never going to release his tax returns?
We'll have to get back to you on that.
Oh, man. I think they have to stop asking that question. It's 209. Downtown Chicago on Michigan Avenue. I know exactly where we are, which is more than the United States Navy can say, but more about that later on. More about that later on. The president will be speaking from Wisconsin. Steve says budget 220 for that or so. That'll be in about 10 and a half minutes. We'll carry his words and then maybe talk a little bit more about that afterwards. So in the remaining time that we have between now and, say, the president speaking, just a couple of quick notes for me. Number one is, I don't know where you're going to be on Thursday, but our Hometown Voices tour stop presented by Allstate is next going to be Pinstripes in Oak Brook. I don't know if you get around Oak Brook or Oak Brook Center that often. One's the one, the other's the other. They're right there in Oak Brook / Terrace. And Pinstripes is, what's the address on that? Oak Brook Center. Anyway, head on over there. See us tomorrow, Thursday, between 1 and 3 o'clock. We'll do the whole show. They've got a discount for your lunch, too, while you're enjoying the broadcast. So between 1 and 3, make it a late lunch and hang out with us. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tours presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands. Come on out and say hi. It's been a long time since I've done one of the Hometown Voices Tours. And I don't know what your plans are, but I'd love it if you could just come by and say hi. We'd like to have a nice big crowd, make a lot of racket. You can ask questions. We'll have some laughs and talk about some things as well. Sun-Times has the story about the buck stops here. Cubs are handing out World Series rings, but there's a catch. And we'll talk more about this a little bit tomorrow as well. But in part, the reporting goes like this. It's Stefano Esposito and Mitchell Armantrout wrote, the Cubs organization is handing out World Series championship rings to players and other employees. Appraisers say they could fetch anywhere from $50,000 to $250,000 on the market. The Cubs are discouraging the recipients from selling them, though. If they get the urge, the Cubs reserve the right to buy each ring back for $1, according to a memo from the organization. They asked the players and the recipients of the rings to sign this pledge. We regret the formal nature of this memo, and we do not intend for this information to overshadow our joy in being able to provide this ring to you. However, we think it is important to communicate this information to you. If you're planning to sell or otherwise transfer your ring, it says, you must give written notice of the proposed transaction and a complete accounting of the terms. There's more. If the Cubs elect not to purchase your ring back for a dollar, then you may transfer it according to the terms you provided to the Cubs. However, each subsequent owner shall be bound by these terms in the event of a subsequent proposed sale or other transfer. So if we let you do it, that's fine. But if that person wants to flip it, then it's back to us for a dollar unless we give the okay. You know how sometimes you see bumper stickers on cars and it's for a radio station and you go, wow, what a crappy car. Or you make some judgment about the person like, oh boy, that's a knucklehead. He just flipped me off or he's driving aggressively. That's a guy I don't like. And then you see the bumper sticker and you go, wow, that's a bad association for that radio station or that politician or whatever the bumper sticker is espousing. And so then you think, I wonder if they knew that all the bad publicity from that bumper sticker was going to be coming from this person if they would have given him the bumper sticker at the thing. The Cubs are sort of doing that with the rings. They're worried that if the ring goes to somebody or something that they don't love, if, I don't know, the Reinsdorfs picked one up. I don't know who these people are, but it sounds like for some reason they want to control the image of the Cubs via the ring. Otherwise, why would they care?
Well, they want to keep it to where it's supposed to be and not become this sort of diluted, passed around thing. I mean,
I don't know what that means.
Well, it's what they're doing is they're giving someone who was part of the organization a recognition for being part of it as well. Here, take this ring, I thee wed. You know, it's you were part of our team in this. Now, if you want to get rid of that, then what that ends up doing is, I mean, they're breaking a contract with the recipient. I get that. I mean,
it's a gift. It's not a, you know, it's not a transaction.
Maybe it's not a gift.
It's a gift. Hey, listen, you and I went through something spectacular together, and I'm a billionaire. So here, have this swell ring. And you go, wow, thanks for the swell ring. And then you go, you know what? I think I'm going to sell this swell ring, or I'm going to give it to my friend. Do I have to go back to you, the giver? I thought gifts were one-way transactions, Steve. I'm giving this to you.
Let me ask you this. Does this apply to the players as well?
Yes, it does. They had to sign a thing as well. Now, the rings that the players are getting have the 108 diamonds. There are tiers of rings. So if you're an usher, you probably won't get a super-duper diamond-studded ring, but it sounds like you're going to get a pretty dandy ring.
Right. But, I mean, I think I hear of players late in their lives or later in their lives selling the rings.
Well, they talk about that in the story, too. I mean, an usher could probably use $10,000. If you said, hey, here's the ring from the team that year. Maybe there's one diamond in it. I don't know. But I'll bet they could get some money for that. So are you going to deny the usher a college education for their grandson or daughter?
Jeez.
Because you...
Why don't you make it, cancer therapy
or
something?
I know. So, Steve...
Right. How about, am I going to deny the usher trips to the boats so that they can gamble away their money?
The usher has cancer. And the doctors go, boy, if you only had $5,000, right. Hey, that's an awful swell ring you got there. No, the Ricketts won't let me sell it.
This disease rings a bell with me.
Ha, ha. Brad, what did you want to say? You're on WGN. Hello.
Well, my only comment, John, is that, you know, these rings end up on the secondary market all the time. And they've ended up on the secondary market sometimes by players who've had financial troubles. I mean, Craig Hodges' Bulls rings, for instance, were up on the secondary market for sale.
Hodges had financial troubles?
He went bankrupt.
I didn't. They all went bankrupt. Wow. What a shame. What a shame. But, okay, what's your thought about Hodges cashing in on his Bulls rings?
Well, I mean, you know, in a certain sense, gifts are gifts or salaries are salaries. If this is part of their contract that, you know, that they get a ring as part of their compensation, I'll bet you the IRS wants to tax that ring as compensation to these players. But notwithstanding that, if it's part of their contract, they could do with it what they want. And I don't think the Cubs can put a secondary condition
right,
on it.
Right.
But it's the same. It is the same, very similar to an Academy Award. Those don't come up on the market because for the last 50 years or whatever it is, the Motion Picture Arts and Academy has had a contract in it saying that they can't be transferred and they have to be given back to the Academy. Now, maybe they go in a museum, but they can't be transferred ownership-wise.
Yeah, I'm not loving that. You know, like if I'm Hodges or if I'm the part-time docent who does tours at Wrigley Field, I was part of the program, and you've decided to give this to me. I just don't understand strings attached to gifts like that. Hey, listen, if I gave you a gift, Brad, for Christmas, would it be okay for you after a year going, you know what, we really don't need this. Let's sell it on Craigslist. Would that be okay?
Well, it's the same. It's the same as the concept of regifting.
I know. That's what this is.
Well, you're calling it a gift. What if you called it compensation, or you know, a reward? Or I'm really trying to disagree with you, and it's getting harder and harder.
Thank you for the phone call, Brad.
Steve, all right, Jen.
Steve, thanks. If you can come up with a better argument, I'd love to hear it. By the way, is the president about to speak here?
I haven't seen him lately, but he's on his way or in Kenosha.
Okay. Well,
we'll listen to some of it. I don't know if there's a reason to listen to all of it. But
well, I'd like to hear maybe the opening kickoff. That's supposed to be around 2:20, right?
Well, yeah. I mean,
he's not Bill Clinton. I don't know. What's the history on Donald Trump? Is he fairly timely or not? Clinton's famously not.
Well, Obama was pretty late, too.
Yeah, right.
I haven't noticed yet, to be honest with you.
I think
he's been better than those guys.
The Bushes were pretty punctual.
Yes, they were.
They wanted to be, not only because they were, but also because they didn't want to be the Clintons and the Obamas. But I don't know what the Trumps are on this sort of thing. I had tickets to last night's Cubs game, and when the tickets were given to me, I was indoors, but with us being at work and all. And the last time I'd been outdoors yesterday, it was very warm. And so when Jeff said, hey, here's a couple tickets, would you use them? I said, yeah. So I called my buddy and said, hey, listen, I think I got tickets. In fact, I know I got tickets to the game. Do you want to go? And he said, yeah. He said, do you need me to bring a hat and gloves and a coat for you? Because I know you don't have all your stuff down here yet. And I thought, what is he talking about? It's 80 degrees outside. It got cold in a hurry last night. The wind was blowing in. I thought, well, at least they won't hit home runs out.
Well, they didn't.
Yeah, we didn't. They did. First inning home run, second inning home run, the third inning home run. I thought, you've got to be kidding me. What is going on here? These are not the Cubs that I paid money to see last year or that I paid money to see this year that played last year. These are not the Cubs from last year.
Did you say paid money?
I didn't pay money to see a game. Are you kidding me? I'm a broadcaster. But I was pleased to see a headline in a story today saying something like, don't worry, going through these tribulations now might actually do us some good down the road, so we'll be fine. We'll be fine. And I'm happy to hear that. I don't know if you feel that way, but it just doesn't look like the team of old.
Well, I mean, I think the Brewers are a new powerhouse organization, too.
I hope so. I hope the Pirates are going to be in contention, too, because they look like the world champions compared to us. So then I went home, and I thought, well, at least I'll be able to watch the Black. Never mind. That was a really interesting Blackhawks game.
Four-game losing streak is nothing.
Man, this is going to be embarrassing if the Blackhawks don't win the next game.
Oh, they will.
And then if you said of all of those three teams, which do you think will be on the uptick, you know, in the middle of April, I would not have guessed the Chicago Bulls. But a lot of people have them winning it all this year. Looks like the Bulls are going to be the NBA champions.
They are the prohibitive favorite, are they?
Yeah. So you never know.
I know.
What do you think's going to happen?
Well, I know they're not going to win at all.
Right. You think the Bulls will win this first round?
No, I don't know. Hope
you,
so.
You
but
think that the
I wouldn't be. I'd be surprised if they did.
Will the Blackhawks get past the Predators?
Yes.
Really? So you see them turning this thing around?
Absolutely.
Well, I have no reason. Well, I have plenty of reason to doubt it. But we're the real deal here.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be better than this. There's no reason we can't. And do you think the Cubs are okay?
Absolutely.
All right, I like your optimism.
I mean, last year in the playoffs and lately, I kept saying the Cubs are the best team in baseball. They're going to be okay.
Yeah, right.
And the Blackhawks are arguably the best team in hockey. They're going to
be
okay.
Yeah.
Not I'm leaving.
Yeah. So a recent poll by Pew Research found that the feeling that some wealthy do not pay their fair share of taxes bothered 79% of the respondents, some or a lot. 8 out of 10 of us are bothered a little or a lot by the notion that the rich don't pay their fair share. Recent analysis by the Joint Committee on Taxation shows that these respondents can rest easy. As a group, taxpayers who make over $1 million pay an average tax rate of 27.5%. At the bottom of the income scale, taxpayers who earn less than $100,000 pay an average tax rate of -7%. They actually get money back from the government in the form of refundable tax credits. The U.S. income tax system is progressive, with marginal tax rates increasing as incomes increase. And if you say, yeah, but what about the fact that we all have to pay for property taxes and sales taxes and excise taxes and
Social Security
taxes? And when you include all of that, the rich are still paying more than, they're paying at a higher rate. Of course they're paying more, but they're paying at a higher rate than you or me. So I guess I'm encouraged by that. All of this rhetoric notwithstanding, I still feel like they don't pay enough. I mean, let's put it this way. I think there's enough loopholes for them to get away with it.
That's the angering part to me, is that the laws are written in such a way to benefit the big earners.
Yeah. I was.
Although I guess if you're getting money back and not, you know, you're coming out on plus, the laws are written to benefit the very poor too.
Well, but I think that's in. I don't think this is. So this article at CNN or at taxfoundation.org, I think is kind of. I don't know that this is that helpful, because if you say, okay, the very, very, very poor aren't paying much taxes, and you compare them to the very, very rich who are paying a lot of taxes, well, whatever, of course.
Right.
I mean, really, I didn't expect the people earning less than $10,000 a year to be paying at 20%. I don't expect them to be paying at all. They ain't got the money. Let's not take it from them.
So what are the millionaires paying at? 22%? 27?
27.5.
So what do the 100,000-aires pay at?
Yeah, I can get you to that here, Steve. It says if your income is between 75 and 100,000, this says you're paying about 18%.
Okay, 10% less?
100,000 to 200,000, 22%. Over 200 to 527, then it goes 31. And the richest, those making over $1 million, are, when you put it all together, paying about 33%. I actually don't believe that either. I mean, the Trumps didn't pay 33%.
The Obamas didn't pay 33%.
They didn't pay 33%. Says here, even when we consider these taxes, the tax code is still progressive. The Joint Committee on Taxation report finds that the average combined marginal income and social insurance and blah, 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 the average combined marginal rate is higher for those who make more, and it goes progressively down the way it's supposed to.
Well, okay, but it's not, no one's arguing that it doesn't go down. It's about how much it goes down or how much it goes up, right? That's what we're arguing.
So if you're between 50,000 and 100,000, which, you know, God bless you if you are, but I think you are not taking home enough money. I think those people are paying too much in taxes. Then the idea that you're making $70,000-$80,000 and life is easy now, I think is completely wrong. And I don't know what the solution is. I can't make coffee cheaper, but I could probably make your taxes cheaper. That's what I think I'll do. Listen, the press conference today, on the Sean Spicer show, they asked Mr. Spicer, we had that audio, we played it earlier, didn't we, Aleph? They said, is the president ever going to release his taxes? And poor little Sean, he just said, well, we'll get back to you. I'll get back to you on that. Like, this hasn't come up before. I think the correct answer for Sean Spicer is no, not while he lives, or not while he's president anyway. He's not going to release his taxes.
But that's not, they can't say that because that's not their justification. They're using an excuse of an audit.
Yeah. But everybody knows, except Sean Spicer knows, that that's a bogus claim, that they can release their taxes under audit, and other people have, just to prove it. So the president could release his taxes if he wanted to. And he promised that at some point he would. And then he said, no, I don't think I ever will. I'm not even sure where that ping pong ball is. But I'm asking you this. Is it important to you that he does that now? Would you still want to see the president release his taxes on this, our tax day? Really, tell me, answer that for me. My number is 312-981-7200. I don't want his taxes released now, because I don't think we need the distraction. It will serve us no good.
Distraction from what? From tax reform?
Sure, from tax reform, from health care, from our boats are sailing, all these things.
If he's pushing a tax reform plan, which is really a tax cut plan, don't you want to know how he would benefit from it?
I suspect he'll be fine. I mean, really, put it this way, Steve. Suppose it's a good plan, and then he benefits from it too. Then they'll say, aha, he's doing it because it's for him. I don't think his personal situation shines any light.
Well, I don't think he's going to, I'll say it a different way. I don't think the whatever he supports, he's going to end up supporting because it benefits him personally.
Say that again.
I think whatever the tax bill is that he pushes, he's not doing it to benefit only himself.
That's my point,
right?
Too.
He's
I agree.
Fine.
Yeah, I think he's fine.
He's not saying if I could only cut my taxes.
I know. Do the rich really care when they're billionaires? Maybe they do.
Well, I think they do. But
when they're president of the United States, I'd like to think that this is not a germane issue for them relative to the legislation they're considering.
Maybe there'll be a tax cut in there for wives from Slovenia or something.
It's 249. Okay, now you just hush up, fella.
We need to know it.
Meanwhile, let's go back to Trump and his taxes, and is there any value in him releasing them? And Casey wanted to say something. Hi, Casey.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You're trying to compare gross income against net income.
Yeah.
You know, okay, if you make $1 million, it might be 33% taxes. But after you get all your deductions down, it may put you in a lower bracket.
Right. I understand.
For your adjusted gross income. So
I'm sorry. Why are you telling me that? I'm confused. What's the point?
Because you were saying, you know, people who make $1 million will pay 33%. Well, if you make $1 million, the $1 million isn't taxed at $1 million.
Oh,
you get all your deductions.
Sure. I guess, though, there are some people who, after all of those deductions, their net is $1 million. But whatever. Either way, I guess our point was that it truly is a progressive system. That's what the Tax Foundation
is saying.
Right.
So what he's saying is you might make $2 million. Have $1 million in deductions and then pay 30% on your $1 million.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So where I thought, so you're sort of reinforcing the notion that the rich are playing the game better than the rest of us, Casey?
Yes, because they have a lot more options than the rest of us do. They can hide stuff a little better,
They have more to hide too.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they must be good at it because they're doing it.
Thanks for the phone call, Casey. Yeah, heads up to me. Thanks for joining us. George, you're next. You're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good, man.
So, you know, about the whole tax returning, releasing it, arguably one of the most important, I guess, aspects for a candidate running for president for me is transparency. You know, kind of getting into the head and seeing their personal life and who they are as a person, because they're going to be running the country. So that's obviously important. His tax return is only going to be important when it comes time for a re-election. I think releasing it, let's face the facts. He's president. Okay, we're not going to impeach him based on anything we're going to see in his taxes.
I agree. We
need to not release it. Don't convolute the presidency. Don't create a big hellstorm and a fire here in the U.S. Let him do what he has to do. And then when it comes time for re-election, then release it and then elect him again based on his merits.
You know, it's funny. That sounds cockamamie or backwards, but that, to me, it's a bigger campaign issue than it is a governing issue. I'm so glad you called. Thanks for joining us. I'm out of time. Ro and the rest of them are getting ready to entertain you and inform you, and we'll pick this up maybe tomorrow or maybe in 4 or 8 years. Gave away some Cavalia Odiseo tickets, I think. I'm looking in there. Hey, Aleph, did we give away those tickets? Do we have a winner on them? Because I thought, wow, I'm really doing a good job. Look at those phone lines.
You are doing a good job, yeah.
Dawned on me, I gave away a $500 prize, and that may have something to do with it instead.
It's funny how that works. That's the worst thing to do if you're ever doing it. Like when you first started out in talk radio and you went to like the phone calls, you threw something out there.
Yeah.
And the phones were that, as we like to say, dead gray shark's white tooth, you know, like mm-hmm. sort of look, nothing there. And then you go, oh, but I got a $20 gift certificate to blah, blah, blah. And then whoop. And then everything goes crazy. And
suddenly you're popular.
Yeah. Then you know.
One time on one of my radio shows, I had that. I signed the radio station on at 5 a.m. It wasn't on at 4 a.m. You mm-hmm. turn it on, and then I had a giveaway, and so I gave away the prize. I said, just be the first caller right now. We'll give you whatever it was, and nobody called. And I thought, I actually may not be talking to anybody right now. There may be not one solitary single person listening to my voice. It was like $20.
Yeah.
How are you, Rokan? It's good to see you.
I couldn't be better, John. Sylvia Perez is with us today.
Nice to see you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Very nice to meet you in person.
Likewise.
Yes.
She is. She's in for Anna today. Anna's taking a couple of days off after Easter. So we are, and we're getting underway here. We got the president just spoke in Wisconsin, signed an executive order. He's at Snap-on Tools. I love the posters, by the way. Big fan. So we'll talk about what he did there. And also Bob Baer is going to join us in this hour, too, the former CIA agent.
Terrific.
One of the most decorated ever. Talking about what's going on in the global war on terrorism as well as the situation in North Korea. Turns out that remember the armada the president was sending to North Korea?
Right.
It was steaming in the wrong direction at that time, but that's okay. We have, there's a little, there might be some confusion
is
here.
Is Betsy DeVos driving the ship? Is that
going,
what it is?
It was going in, it always goes in one other direction. I don't know. I can't quite keep up with what's happening here.
Maybe
but
they
I'm
were going. Maybe they're heading to North Korea the long way. You know, via the South Pole.
Scenic route is what you
come back
say.
Around.
Right. Yeah. So, right. Sort of like Columbus when he's looking for India, like
yeah,
that.
Right.
You mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I get it. Yeah. I think I'm here. Am I here? I'm here.